Former U.S. House Speaker Tip O'Neill is, of course, credited with the phrase, all politics is local. Well, given what we've seen at the Indiana State House in recent years, it might be time to coin a variation on that theme. How about local government reform is all politics? After all, it's far more political, especially at the grassroots level, than almost any other issue the General Assembly has tackled, or more accurately, attempted to tackle. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll tackle the thorny issue of local government reform with an expert panel. Is township government democracy at its best, or an opaque, obsolete, and often overlapping bureaucracy that's prone to corruption? What if any township or city services should be consolidated at the county level? And aside from a proposed streamlining of township government, what happened to the much ballyhooed local government reforms proposed 4 years ago by the so-called Kernan Shepherd Commission? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park at Ameriplex, Indianapolis. Set on 80 acres near the new International Airport, the Purdue Research Park at Ameriplex, Indianapolis. The idea economy is here.
If you don't think local government is an important statewide issue, I'd encourage you to pay close attention for the next 24 minutes or so. My guess is that you'll end up concluding that when it comes to local government reform, the stakes are high, and so are the emotions. Joining me are four people who certainly don't need a street map to find their way around local government. Republican Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman, the person charged with advancing the administration's local government reform agenda. Democratic Representative Scott Reske of Pendleton, a vocal participant in some of this session's most heated reform debates. Bluffton Mayor Ted Ellis, past president of the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns and current president of the National League of Cities. And David Bodorf, executive director of the Association of Indiana Counties. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion. Becky Skillman, let's start with you. Who's your crossroads tour? This is something you kicked off last year. You decided you wanted to go to all 92 counties and talk to local government officials. You're about a third of the way through, I guess, by my count. Why spend your last days in office going around the state to talk to local government officials?
Well, some might ask, why would you go to all 92 counties when you don't have to? But, you know, it's something I enjoy. And in July, when I sat down to look at a year and a half left in office, the big question is, what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? And the list is long. But I decided that we would go on a Hoosier Crossroads tour. I wanted to sit down with local elected leadership at the city, town, and county level, have frank, open, honest discussion about how we can work together to better serve Hoosiers. You know, we're all representing the same people here. There can occasionally be adversarial position, the locals against the state, and I think that's even more so during tough economic times. But the questions are, how can we create more partnerships together, the locals with the state? How can we create efficiencies, communities working together along with the state, and how can we save Hoosier taxpayer dollars? And it's been a fascinating discussion to date. I have been to around one-third of all of our counties, met with around 220 mayors and president of county commissions and county council, clerk treasurers, and they haven't been bashful about, you know, providing their input.
So the open, candid part of the, you've been able to accomplish that?
I think it's the only way it can be successful. You know, you don't violate open door when you have just the leadership of each of those local units. And you know, I tell them I've been an elected official for many years, and I have broad shoulders, so please be open and honest. In my list of recommendations, of course, there's change at the local level, but there's change at the state level as well. There are things state government can do to help local elected officials do their jobs better.
And of course, neither operates in a vacuum. What the state does, to a large extent, determines what county and local officials do, and vice versa.
That's so why I know we can do more through partnerships.
Well, we're going to talk about some of those things. I'm curious, as we go around the panel, sort of the state of local government as you see it.
Right.
Scott Reske, what's your take? Where are we with local government in Indiana right now?
My biggest concern is to make sure that we don't kill the spirit of volunteerism at the local community. And one of the things that I'm afraid of with township reform is that the most important thing that happens to the township government is the volunteer fire departments in the rural area. And a lot of the push...
You're a volunteer firefighter yourself,
right? I was, yes, for almost 20 years, right? And it's very important for to recruit volunteers that they feel that they're part of the community. And if we push that administration of volunteer fire departments up to the county level, then that kills the spirit of the community down at the lower level. And I think that's the biggest danger with some of the reform is to be not to be aware of what they may do as far as stifling the volunteer spirit of Indiana.
And this, again, for those who haven't followed it closely, one of the proposals would take all of the fire agencies in a given county, put it under one umbrella group,
right,
and include in that volunteer firefighters.
Exactly.
Now, and
I'm
sure we'll be getting to that issue as we get into some of the specifics. But this notion of overall state of local government, and Ted Ellis, I noticed after the President's State of the Union address a few days ago, you issued on behalf of the National League of Cities a reaction saying, you know, we can't wait a year, no time for promises. We got to have action in municipal government and local government now because it's a bleak situation, it's a dire situation. Those weren't your words exactly, but that was the message. Where's it bleak and dire? Are you talking about Indiana local government and municipalities, or I know there are, 19,000 cities, towns, and villages that are part of National League of Cities. Are we better off or worse off, I guess, than some of our counterparts around the country?
Well, I think we're now seeing the effects of the economy's tanking. You know, several years ago, local government seems to lag in terms of revenue generation, and we're seeing that. That's where it's dire. But another more subtle assault on local government, I think, and this comes, I was in the White House last week. I've heard the governor talk about this. I've heard members of Congress all talk about how the government that functions best is the government closest to the people, but that message is quickly forgotten. And I think probably preserving and enhancing locals' ability to be accountable for decisions and to make those decisions is probably more dire than the fiscal challenges right now. There's not a mayor or county commissioner or county council member in Indiana that's afraid to look his constituents in the eye and say, we need to raise this revenue, and here's why. Here's the issue, and take the lumps if that's the case.
Is that concern? Does that explain some of the reluctance where there are pockets of reluctance about consolidation? The lieutenant governor just mentioned that she heard a call for efficiency, for cost savings, for consolidation, or teaming up, I think was maybe the phrase you used. Does teaming up inherently take away that local government that you say is the best kind of government?
Actually, across the United States, where we see, and we don't see much local government consolidation right now, where we see it is in service delivery. It's not wholesale reorganization, but it's in a case where there may be fire protection issues or there may be public safety issues, and where the locals are allowed to sit down, as we did with the lieutenant governor when she was in Wells County, and just knock these things around, we can come up with some pretty creative solutions to some of these problems if we have the flexibility to do so.
I would agree with the mayor. You need to have that. You need to have the control as low as closest to the people as you can. But that doesn't mean you can't team up with another locality and consolidate some services. But as soon as you lose the control and it moves up to a higher level, that's when you're really going to get in. The efficiencies you may gain, the inefficiencies get hidden. The more efficient inefficiencies you have, it's easier to hide those. So I think closer to the people is absolutely the way to go.
I guess the challenge is what the most effective kind of local government probably is in the eye of the beholder. To some, that means township government.
Yeah,
if
you're
a mayor, it probably means municipal government.
Yeah.
And if you're a county official, it probably means county government.
Yeah.
And speaking of counties, David Bodorf, again, you're in the trenches dealing with these issues every day. What's your overall assessment of local government right now?
I think following up on Mary Ellis's comments, we're still in a bit of a surviving mode because of the economy, especially here in Indiana, the way income tax collections work. Local units of government are really just starting to experience the downturn and the drop in income taxes at the state level that they experienced in 2008 and 2009. We're starting to realize that at its depths in 11 and 12 and maybe into 13. But we do see a bright horizon with the state income tax collections up so much the last 2 years. We know eventually that will trickle down to local units of government. And then instead of being just surviving, we hope we start to be able to thrive again in a year or two. But the economy has forced us to look across county lines or city and town boundaries to try to find efficiencies. And like Scott said, you know, eliminating local elected officials doesn't necessarily create efficiencies. And I think people like the fact there's somebody that they get to vote for that's down the street from them that they can find in the courthouse or the township fire department to get in there and shake their hand and talk to them about issues. But they want that person to help them find efficiencies. And if you eliminate that person and they have to travel someplace else to voice their complaint, either the state house or even maybe the courthouse if it's from a city or town, you start to lose that feeling of control from a citizen, I think. So I think as we move forward with local government reform or local government improvements, it's going to be on us to advocate to our membership, look across the political boundary lines to find efficiencies and improve services. But simply eliminating elected officials is not going to bring that about.
But I think David's absolutely correct in that very tough economic times cause us to be creative and innovative and search out efficiencies. And just by having this statewide conversation about efficiency and pooling resources, if you will, and consolidation of local units of government, it is occurring around the state without any mandates. And you need look only to Zionsville that combined with two township governments, and they wanted to keep the rural flavor of the township, so the two township trustees were placed on the town board. It's happening in Yorktown and in Brownsburg, and so all of these efficiencies being created through consolidation are occurring just because we've gone through some very tough economic times and partnerships. You know, isn't it true that most of the success we have in life, whether personally, professionally, or as a local unit of government, our success is due to the strength of our partnerships and our relationships, and it's beginning to happen in Indiana.
And you mentioned this, the importance, as you see it, of this statewide conversation about these issues, and I guess we could say that that's a conversation in some ways that, well, it goes way back. I won't pretend that people weren't talking about it 20, 30, 40 years ago, I'm sure, but it really kind of came to the public spotlight in a big way 4 years ago with the creation of the so-called Kernan Shepherd Commission, which looked at all sorts. I think, I don't know if they went to all, they were as ambitious as you in going to all 92 counties, but they talked to a lot of people and came up with a lot of recommendations, some very sweeping, I think 27 maybe in all. And I remember the report in the foreword, it said something about if these are not passed in mass, they'll basically be, you know, nickel and dimed, or they'll be handled in a piecemeal fashion, and it really won't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? 4 years later, they've sort of been handled in a piecemeal fashion. Right. That clearly, maybe a quarter, I think, of those 27 have been enacted. Why is it so difficult, even with this blue ribbon panel, even with you and your partner in the governor's office, foursquare behind this? Why is it so difficult to bring about these kinds of reforms?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. I do believe Hoosiers are getting more accustomed to change, but traditionally we haven't been great supporters of change. And you know, we all have friends. I have many friends. You know, I represented five rural counties during my 12 years in the Indiana Senate, so I have many friends who are elected as township trustees, township advisory board members, and when you speak of township reform specifically, that's a lot of numbers to lobby legislators, friends,
more than
neighbors.
4,000 trustees or trustee officials.
With advisory board members,
right,
and
if
township
you lump all
officials.
That together, because we're talking, what, about 1,006 townships, I think?
Right. And that's one reason why I thought it was important to go out into communities and actually talk to county officials, city, town, county officials. Legislators know very well how township government officials feel on these subjects and proposals for change, but often it would be county officials that then pick up that responsibility if you would indeed eliminate township advisory board members and place that fiscal authority with the counties. Then we need to know how counties feel about that. And although all acknowledge change would not be easy in their community, I was pleasantly surprised at the number of counties that said the time has come and we're ready to accept that responsibility.
Did I see, if I'm remembering this correctly, you said about an eighth of the of people you had who talked to or had completed your survey said they'd be willing to go down that path?
That sounds realistic, and of course we didn't attribute these comments to any specific local government official or county because we did want them to be open and honest.
Your contention is there is more of an appetite maybe than anybody would think, would conclude.
Yes.
Is there an appetite, Scott Reske?
Well, I was going to say, a lot of this reform, the problem with it coming through the legislature is that a lot of us realize that one size does not fit all. And there's in some areas, consolidation of the townships absolutely should happen. And we gave them the tools to do that. In some places, the more rural areas, it would be an economic disaster. And why would that happen? Back to the volunteer fire departments. In states that consolidated their volunteers, their communities, up to the county level, within 2 years saw a 50% drop in their volunteers. And as soon as you go shift from a volunteer fire department to a paid department, it costs $1 million to man one engine with four guys 24/7. Compare that to a volunteer fire department for one-fourth of that, about $250,000 a year, can put out 40 volunteers, three engines, and probably two ambulances and a rescue truck. So right away, if we are too reckless in what we do with township government, we are going to cause the loss of volunteer fire departments throughout the rural areas and escalate the cost of local government just at the snap of a finger.
Ted Ellis, what do you think about that? I don't know what kind of the fire setup is in Bluffton, you rely on volunteers or in surrounding areas you do perhaps rely on volunteers. Is this a legitimate concern in your estimation?
It is, and fire protection is something that people are entitled to, and it's a high priority, and I think the representative has it right that the locals probably know better. I remember when the lieutenant governor was in Wells County. It was the first time, and we have pretty good relationships with our county officials there, but we never seemed to have the opportunity to sit down and say, okay, let's just throw it out here and let's talk for a while without anybody having an agenda. Let's just talk about it. And I think, and again, we see this nationwide, and Indiana's no exception, that these are solutions that come about because someone perceives there's a problem to be fixed. And most of the government reform across the United States, when it happens because probably fiscal issues are driving reform. So in the case, it's not unique to fire protection, but that's certainly a good example of how the locals sitting down in a room can probably work this out if they're given the freedom to work it out.
You know, as we go around the table, I'm reminded that because you all represent a variety of party affiliations, I think we have a fairly even breakdown here. I'm reminded, though, this is not a partisan issue, unlike so many issues in the State House. This is more of I don't want to say it's versus, but there is a versus here. But is it more of an urban versus rural? It's more of a Indianapolis versus and Gary and Fort Wayne and Evansville versus the rest of the state? I mean,
only if we don't, as a legislature, as a state, understand that there is a distinct difference between what happens in the urban areas and the rural areas. If we keep that in mind, then we'll apply the best solutions, I think. But as soon as you say this solution applies to everybody, that's when we're in trouble.
David Bondorf, do some people forget? Is it your contention that some people from urban areas don't appreciate the distinction?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And really, for me, it doesn't matter the size of your city or the county. What we're talking about here is coordination of services. And so even if you have a county where you have complete volunteer fire departments, except for maybe for the major city, the organizations need to sit down and talk coordination to make sure, here's our fire territory schedule, here's what you're going to cover, what we're going to cover, you buy this truck, we'll buy that truck, we'll share services. That's the way you find efficiencies and save money.
I do think there's a perception that the small towns and rural areas are most resistant to change, and I did not find that to be true. In fact, it was some of the smaller communities that said, quite frankly, we are the perfect example of a county that could consolidate. You know, we already share services, we share equipment. Now, Would it be easy to bring about? No. But I've visited small rural counties with 20,000 or less in population, and they have 14 township administrations. And, you know, around the table they admit that's a lot of administration. And maybe we just need to consolidate along county commissioner boundaries.
One where of the you proposals, specific proposals, and we're almost out of time, which is embarrassing because we haven't gotten to a lot of the specifics, but funding flexibility, I mean, you've all, virtually every answer is touched in some way, shape, or form on the notion of money and the lack thereof. Yeah. You've proposed, Lieutenant Governor, giving local government agents or entities more flexibility, the same way perhaps that schools have in terms of going to voters and saying we'd like to have a referendum so that you can weigh in on whether you want to see your property taxes go up. Scott Reske, is that a good idea?
Yeah, I think referendum, they need to decide what's best for their county, their locality, their township. And so I firmly believe in that.
And I'm guessing that Ted Ellis and David Bodorf, the notion of letting voters in your respective jurisdictions decide is appealing to you?
It is. And sometimes we talked about the big county versus small county or the large unit versus small. You know, and sometimes it's a cultural difference. People have different expectations in different communities and are willing to pay more or less based on those cultural expectations. I think about, and we're running short on time, I'm sure, but I think about garbage collection. There are 1,000 different ways in Indiana to do trash pickup, and try and change Bluffton's and they'll throw me out of office in 4 years, you know.
So we can't end on the subject of trash. So David Bodorf, take us out on a note other than trash collection.
Well, on the fiscal flexibility, because the money is so tight, if we had more flexibility at the local level to move the funds we have right now into different accounts to avoid having to raise taxes or to avoid shortfalls in a specific service area, that would be very positive for us. And there's some bills going through the General Assembly, especially on local gas tax revenue, that would help us out in that regard. So
very good. Lots of interesting issues related to the very important subject of local government and local government reform, and I appreciate you all being here to share your expertise with us on this program. Again, my guests have been Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman, a second-term Republican, Democratic Representative Scott Reske of Pendleton, Bluffton Mayor Ted Ellis, President of the National League of Cities, and David Bodorf, Executive Director of the Association of Indiana Counties. Class basketball, creationism, cursive writing, and Common Core standards, the 4 C's of education on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, during the roundtable, we talked on many aspects of local government reform. We didn't actually get into the nitty-gritty of one measure, one proposal that actually seems to be headed toward enactment this session, and that is this effort to combat nepotism and perceived conflicts of interest in local government. Is that going to happen, and is it necessary?
I think everybody agrees that there's no problem with nepotism if you don't practice it with your relatives. Seriously, I think that's the one that seems to be the one part of this that seems to be almost on rails this session, other than right to work, for example. But yeah, that looks like it's going to go through. There's a little bit more of a problem with some of the other aspects of these reform measures, as we heard on the roundtable. And one of the interesting things that we heard in debate earlier this week in second reading on the House floor was the question of people voting on their own salaries. And Representative Terry Austin from Anderson, for example, got up there and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, here in the legislature, we vote on our own salaries, even though she pointed out they didn't raise theirs for about 20 years. But she said, why are we better than these people? Why should we be telling them that they can't vote on their own salaries when we do it ourselves?
And because that has been the concern or the driving factor behind, one of the driving factors behind, for instance, the conflict of interest concern, because you look at some city councils around the state. Indianapolis in recent years has been a good example. I think some of the cities up in the region, another example, where you have any number of police officers, firefighters, parks officials who are effectively their own bosses. They sit on the council, vote on budgets, and yet they are city employees themselves. And that's the challenge here.
That's the essence of this, and in some cases, you know, you trust the people that are there to do what's right, regardless of what the law is, and those people will do the right things regardless of the law or anything that says that they can't do it. In other cases, even though you have the law there, you know, they won't do the right thing, And those are the kinds of circumstances I think that they were trying to get at in this particular set of bills and measures, and trying to make sure that there are some protections there, some safeguards that will prevent this situation from even potentially occurring.
And I know our theme is local government, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about right-to-work issues. That's been these job one, or topic one at least, this session. We've seen some votes. We've seen movement. Is no stopping it, right?
It's gone. It's done. The Senate this next week will pass it. It'll go to the governor. It'll be signed.
Before the Super Bowl and before the crowds arrive?
We'll have to see about that, but it is over.
It is over. Very good, and so are we, at least for this part of the show. Yeah. Thanks, as always, Ed, for your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. We'll see you back again next week. Until then, take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.